So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this hunter initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Yeah, I'm so tired of seeing all the crap that goes across it, and I just feel like we waste so much time on fighting with one another that I think if we focus that onto something that was a little bit more productive, we'd be a lot better off. So
Yeah, I agree. I just Saturday I did a seminar for a youth fundraiser bow club in Anago, Wisconsin. that was titled The Issues with Deer Management. And I covered a lot of that, what's happening now in today's society as far as big deer and the problems that big deer have caused with neighbors fighting, families fighting. I've seen lawsuits against families. I've gone out to do land management practices and set up people's properties. And they say, well, I only want this section set up because this is where I hunt, and I don't want my uncle to shoot a deer on this side of the property. And
oh, God.
I'm like, are you serious, people? And it's part of that led into, we aren't going to get youth. We aren't going to recruit new hunters. We won't get any hunters if we keep doing this. Everybody's forgot what hunting is truly about. And we need to look at that. And some states are trying to take the initiative and setting back and saying, okay, you know, now we don't have an age limit, which is great. But if we don't have anybody to teach them properly and to take the certain steps, it doesn't do any good to get them out there, because so many people are starting to not hunt anymore because of certain rules, regulations, or because, as you're saying, the hate amongst hunters, if it's not a crossbow, it's a longbow, it's a recurve, or it's a compound, whatever. There's so many different things that they fight about or figure out that I don't like him because, or her because, they shoot a rifle. They should be shooting a muzzleloader. They should be. Who cares?
Yeah.
And that's you see
super
it.
Super ridiculous.
Yeah. And you see it probably even more than I do, as I've seen your posts come across and different things. And I can't even respond to half of them because I'm either laughing or I'm so upset with our hunting community.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is. How do you do it? And you said you were looking at doing something as far as getting new hunters involved too. So I applaud you for that.
Yeah, I'm going to try this Hunter Up initiative, trying to get, all my friends that have a voice like yourself, and, you know, I'm going to reach out to everybody here shortly once I've kind of got all the ducks in a row. And I'd like to, you know, put it out there so that, you know, everybody takes one person, you know, a year, basically try to recruit one person into hunting a year, either a kid or even a coworker, whatever, family friend, somebody who's not a hunter now, you know. It doesn't matter to me if it's a child or not. I mean, preferably I'd like the children to get into it because they're, impressionable and are easier to mold, you know. But really, I just want, if everybody was to go out there and get 100 and bring 100 in here, even if it was 5% of us, 5% of the 13 point whatever million we are here in the United States that hunt, it would take us 5 years to get back to the numbers we were in the 1980s, you know, because they use that as a benchmark. Oh, that's like the last great era for hunting was in the 80s when, you know, there was enough deer and there was a lot of hunters and so on and so forth. I think that would be huge, you know.
I grew up in the 80s, so that's when I started hunting, you know, and in 82 is when we could legally start hunting here in Wisconsin. And yeah, I just keep watching the numbers. And is it because of CWD? Is it because of kids are in so many sports and the parents think that every kid today is going to be the next professional athlete, that we're running them all over the country? Is it, I don't know, you know, are we not spending the time? Are we not getting them in the woods enough? Are we, I don't know. You know, we run
I think it's just us, man. And it's not doing it. And the parents, it's on us. And really, if you think about it, I mean, I use this as an example to a lot of people because the perception of hunting in society is hunters are evil, more or less. And you grow up, I mean, hell, you watch a Disney movie as a kid, and the hunters in the movies are bad guys. You know?
Yeah.
Look at Tarzan, okay? So I'm just one that I just resaw not too long ago, the Disney movie Tarzan. The hunter is, I mean, he's a jackass. He's, you know, he's out for one thing. He only wants to kill a gorilla, and he's just willy-nilly shooting all over the place. I mean, going back to when we were kids, Bambi. I mean, come on. You know, if you think about every Disney movie that ever came out that has the hunter character in it, or some type of animal that's running away from hunting, it's all, we're evil. So, there's just nothing out there that gives a positive spin on hunting, or shows the positive. I don't even know it's positive spin, because that sounds like we need a spin to be positive. There's nothing out there that portrays us the way that we really are. Now, are there some toothless hillbilly, you know, crazy guys running around just shooting up everything? Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything else. There's that small little group, but we get lumped together with all that, and you know, that's the public image of a hunter. It's either that or you're bloodthirsty, you know, savage just going out there just to shoot something to stick something on your wall. You know, it's they don't show the conservation. They don't tell it. Nobody knows the fact that we are the reason why animals exist today in the United States, and why there's opportunity, why you can go, you know, to a park and see something out there, you know, whatever, watch elk or sheep or whatever. It just.
Right. And you know, and there's great organizations out there though. You look at like the National Wild Turkey Federation. I'm the president of the chapter here, and in 2 weeks we run a learn to hunt program. The state started the program, and then we as the organization find the mentors, we run the classrooms, we recruit the hunters. We have certain guidelines for they have to have less than 2 years turkey hunting experience to get them into this program. Back when we started this 15 years ago, we had 8 new hunters. Now we run anywhere from, this year I believe we have 28 new hunters.
Awesome.
We run anywhere from 25 to 35 every spring now of new hunters,
Great.
and they range anywhere from age of 10 to the oldest one we ever had was 76 years old.
Nice.
And it's a really neat program. We run them through a 4-hour classroom, and then we get tags through the DNR that are free. The whole program is free that we run,
That's
and we
amazing.
get them out there. All the mentors spend their time. We have a great group of mentors. They go through background checks, take the kid out, or the hunter, not just the kid, but take this new hunter out and teach them about it. Then we bring them back to a classroom setting. And we give them lunch. We go through how to skin that bird, how to cook that bird. We teach them all those things to get them. Hopefully, they enjoy this. They get into the turkey hunting. Now they're going to branch off, hopefully, into deer
Other
hunting,
stuff.
elk hunting, stuff from there. It's a stepping stone, but that is just because of the NWTF, and they have a huge conservation reach. However, there's other groups out there, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. They all do, I'm not sure if they have a learn to hunt program, but they do so much for conservation and to bring new hunters and try to get new hunters recruited
Yeah.
that I think a lot of people need to look into, you know, these different organizations to help get things started, whether it's Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, whether it's Whitetails Unlimited, the National Wild Turkey Federation, all the different
Right.
Ducks Unlimited. There are organizations that we as individuals need to step up also and don't think that, oh, yeah, the next hunter will do it or the next hunter will
Right.
do it. No, we need to make our voices heard and step to the plate and get these people started also.
Absolutely. It's on us. It's on us. It's nice to, I mean, that the conservation organizations are doing it, and they're giving us a voice, and they're providing the funding and the infrastructure behind it. But really, it's got to be that word of mouth type mentality, where you and me talking to our friends that we work with, you know, or somebody at church or whatever the case may be, and say, hey, you know what? Do you want to try hunting? I think you'd enjoy it. You know, why don't you come out with me and see how it is, and you know, experience the birds, the bees, and the, you know, the mountains and the, you know, the woods and so on and so forth, and let them get an understanding. Because at the very least, even if they don't like it for themselves, they're gonna say, it's not just about going out there and killing shit. And it's not like they're just, every time you go out there, you're just bang, 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 pow, pow, flinging arrows in the air, and you know, they'll get a better understanding of it. So, in my opinion, there, I don't see any harm coming from it. I think a lot of people sway away from it because of some of the stuff that you and I were talking about earlier, where there's that competition, you know, out there. And I think people are like, oh man, I don't want to bring more hunters in there. It's just more people to compete with over public land and places to hunt and, you know, da 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 da. But it's a double-edged sword. Without those people, hunting goes away, or might not go away because of greed and how much hunting industry means to the government. But it'll
Oh.
definitely change a lot, and not for the good, I could tell you that.
Yeah, and then we're going to lose a lot of funding to help those programs, to help the wildlife, to help the conservation too. And I don't think a lot of people realize that as they get that greed.
Yeah.
And I don't want him hunting next to me, or I don't want them on public land, or I don't want. And so they bash people to get them to either quit or disappear and hunt somewhere else, but they don't realize the big consequence of what they're doing is they're hurting themselves. And in the end, they're going to end up, there's not going to be hunting, or there's going to be very limited because there won't be funding out there anymore to help with wildlife programs, to help with timber stand programs, to help with,
Right.
you know, any type of habitat improvements. Everything will be gone. And the habitat's gone, the animals are gone. Now all of a sudden, as you said, that double-edged sword unfortunately becomes a one-sided sword, and we cut our own throats.
Right.
That's,
No, that's for sure.
I just hate to see it. I hate to see the fighting with everybody.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad, and it's got to stop. Well, maybe we should jump into this podcast and
There you go.
get off our high horses here. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today we're going to talk with Art Helen about hunting deer in Wisconsin. I'm going to be doing a series of deer hunting podcasts that are state specific, whitetail states, mule deer states, and this is one of the first ones here, so we're gonna jump into it. How's it going?
Going good, and you?
Oh, good man. Just trying to keep my head above water. It's been real busy the last couple months, and I thought I'd slow down a little bit since, you know, in the spring here, but it's my construction business, my pool business is running me ragged right now. So couple that with the
Yeah.
podcast and all the other stuff I'm doing, the writing and whatnot, it's yeah, I got my hands full.
It's good to be busy. You know, I feel your pain. It's seminar season for me, seminar land management, you know, going out and doing a lot of photo shoot work right now. So I feel your pain, but I guess it's always better to be busy than not to be doing anything, right?
Yep, that's for sure. Give us a quick rundown about yourself, just in case people haven't heard you on here before, even though we've had Art on.
Name is Art Helen, Dodgeville, Wisconsin, born here, raised here. I've hunted Wisconsin since, well, 1982. We had to wait until we were 12 years old back at that time. Things have changed since then. Grew up hunting whitetails, then became a very avid turkey hunter. There, branched out and filmed with the Archer's Choice TV show. Been staffed with a lot of different companies out there. Still work with a lot of these companies. Working on our own series of shows here coming up. Just kind of in negotiations and where we're going to put the show and where it's going to be. But it's as I grew up doing this type of hunting, I just fell really in love with bow hunting. And so I've traveled all over the country. I've elk hunted, mule deer hunted, alligator hunted, mountain lion hunted, caribou hunted. So diversified in that, but really truly come back to whitetails.
Yeah.
And whitetails all over the country, whitetails in Wisconsin, just absolutely love them.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about Wisconsin. Tell me about the tag situation. How's it all work? How does Wisconsin work?
Tag system in Wisconsin is for deer, it's all over the counter.
Awesome.
It's depending on the county because each county is a little different because of our CWD issues.
Okay.
The prices are all the same. It's as a resident, it all depends. You're going to get one buck tag for bow and one buck tag for gun. That bow hunting is also includes your crossbow. So you can use that crossbow during bow season, but you only get that one buck tag. Depending
Got it.
on what county you're in, and because of CWD, you can get anywhere from one doe tag up to as many as five or six doe tags on that tag. Non-resident, I believe, is $165. They were talking about raising it. I don't believe they raised it, but I believe it was $165 for non-resident to come in. That's either for the gun tag or for bow tag. Again, it works the same way. They're going to get that one buck tag, depending on where they're at, and then also depending on which county or zone quota, if they're in the southern farmland, central farmland, or northern farmland, or northern woodland, it depends on how many doe tags that they will get with that.
For. So can
You
I
know, 2 years.
shoot two? Can I come and shoot two bucks then? If I come, let's say, the tail end of archery season, shoot a buck with my archery tag, then I kind of get a tag for rifle season and hunt
Yes.
rifle season? Okay.
And if you come during, and let's say you don't shoot one during bow season with that, if you then buy your gun tag and shoot one with your gun tag, if you wanted to stay around and still try to continue to fill that archery tag, you can,
Because the
or
archery season's
but let me,
ongoing.
yeah, let me take that back. I don't believe you can fill, you have to fill your gun tag. So if you don't fill your, I'm trying to think of how this works now, because they changed it last year because of the crossbow issue. If you, I'm trying to think, because here's how it works. Because of, if you're a felon and you can't have a gun, you can still bow hunt in the state of Wisconsin with a bow. If you want to go during the gun season, you can downgrade your weapon. So you can buy that gun tag and then use your archery equipment during that to fill your art or to fill your gun tag. But you can't fill both during the rifle season. You have to fill your archery during archery and then your gun during gun. It's the same way. Then they also have a 10-day muzzleloader season that runs after. So if you gun hunt that 9-day season, if you don't shoot one with a gun, that tag is still good for a 10-day muzzleloader season. Or during that 10-day muzzleloader. So if you shot one early season with your bow and you continued to want to bow hunt throughout the rifle season instead of gun hunt, you could use your archery equipment during 9-day or the next 10 days during the muzzleloader season and shoot a second with your archery equipment. Okay. So
But you couldn't come during gun season with an archery tag in your pocket and a gun tag in your pocket and shoot two during the same season, is what you're saying, with the bow. Okay.
right. You could only shoot the one.
Got it.
But because you have to use that archery tag. But
Got
you
it.
can use that archery tag for a second archery kill any other time. So again, if throw that out there, if you're some type of, you know, if you have a felony that's non-gun related. If something happened and you have that, and you can still hunt, some just can't, but if you still can, and you wanted to archery hunt or hunt during that rifle season, then you could archery hunt early. If you shot one, then you could buy another, you could buy a gun tag and use your archery equipment during that year to go in and actually bow hunt. So you can still shoot, you could shoot two with your archery equipment, or you could shoot one with a gun and one with a bow, depending if
Got
you
it.
wanted to use a bow and a gun, or if you wanted to use your gun during both seasons.
And four. What's the public land situation in Wisconsin?
There is a lot of public land in Wisconsin. A lot of people don't realize how much is actually out there. There is MFL land, which is managed forest land. If you go to the courthouse, or if you even look online on the DNR website, you can go in there and they have where there's two different types of MFL. There's a closed MFL and an open MFL. Open MFL means that you don't pay, as a landowner, pay the extra taxes on that property. If you don't pay the extra taxes on that property, that becomes open to public. That is, you can view that on the DNR website. There's also, they've opened up a lot of the state parks now to hunting during certain times of the year. There's also, there's a lot of public that's just deemed public land for hunting. And
Is that
once you
like
get into the
state
northern
land
part,
or whatever?
yeah, state land. Once you get into northern Wisconsin, then you've got huge national forests and endless opportunities for public land. But there's a lot of it. If you do your research and you look, DNR has a really good website that you can go on and look up all that public land, as far as MFL, as far as where the actual, the parks are, where the national forests are, where there's landowners that just have land in there that say it's open. It's not like Kansas, where you go to Kansas and they have walk-in areas. They don't call them walk-in areas here. It's more of an open MFL.
Got it. I wanted to ask you this before when I was talking asking you about the tag situation. Do you guys have a fall turkey tag that you could buy while you're hunting deer and
You can.
also hunt a turkey at the same time or a bear tag too as well for fall?
Not a bear tag. Bear tags you have to
Spring
apply
only.
for. No, it's a fall tag, but you
Oh, it's a full
apply for
tag? Okay.
it. And it is, this year I finally drew, took me seven years to draw it. It would be the same as a non-resident. There's different zones. It can take anywhere in some of the southern zones. It can take you 2 to 3 years. If you want to get into the really good zones, you're looking at 6, 7 years. And then if you want to get into the northeast part of the state of Wisconsin, then you're going to start looking at 10 to 12, 13 years before you can draw a tag. Yeah, it takes a while to get a tag, but we also have some really, really big bears here.
Yeah,
And
no, I've heard that.
that's one I'm looking forward to. I start September 5th here in the state for a tag this year.
Does it coincide with the deer season at all, though?
It
I'm just trying
actually
to,
it
I'm,
does
okay.
it does for a while. So the way that it works is every other year it flips in the state of Wisconsin. So this year bait hunters get to go first. So they get 5 days, I believe it's 5 days to 5 or 6 days that you get first. And then next year dog hunters will go first. So they get the first sit on dog hunters, then you can start hunting over bait. This year, the bait hunters will sit for X amount of days, then the dog hunters can start hunting, and then it all opens up to both. And then you can run, it runs until, I believe, October 13th this year, October 15th. It changes a few days every year. But yeah, so it does run over the archery season for approximately 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks.
And the reason why I'm
Yeah.
asking is because, we're talking of mainly out of state hunters. That's what this is, we're gearing this podcast too, is a non-resident wanting to come to, to Wisconsin to try his hand at, big Midwest whitetail. And, if I'm going to go somewhere, if there's other opportunities, half the, most of the money spent is the trip and the, lodging and whatever and food that you're going to be spending while you're there. So why not maximize my opportunities? And that's why I'm asking. So the fall turkey tag, does that coincide with the deer hunt as well, or with the archer deer?
As far as the archery hunting, yes.
Okay.
A lot of it coincides with the archery. It opens the same day as archery does, which is, I believe, September 13th or 15th this year, right in
Okay.
that ballpark. And it's an application process for fall turkey tags. However, depending on the zone you're in, down here, zone one, which is a really big zone, there's so many turkey tags left over every fall that you can just
Got it.
buy them over the
Beautiful.
counter. It's the same way in the spring. If you're looking as a non-resident to come in and hunt turkeys this spring,
Okay.
usually it's an application process. First, second, and third season are usually they're done. They're really tough to get the first 3 seasons. However, after that, last or yesterday on Monday, the turkey tags for zone one went on sale. So they started selling leftover tags. I don't know if they sold out of zone or out of four season yet or not, but I know that there was approximately 13,000 left for fifth season and
Jesus.
17,000 for the last season. They never sell out. So from a non-resident standpoint, you could come in and hunt that fifth or sixth season. Even if you get early enough, you can get in there on the fourth season. Today, for zone two, they went on sale. Tomorrow, zone three, then zone four and five, and then it stops. And then as of next Monday, all of the sales will go back
Got
on
it.
in that end of March. So they'll all go back on sale for every zone. The thing with that is, if guys like to fish also, they can come up and they can do a lot of fishing at that time because fishing will be open once those later seasons hit. They aren't open during our first couple seasons, but once you get into that fourth, fifth, and sixth season, then our fishing is open. And so again, they have other options. They can go fishing, turkey hunt, well, looking for morels on public land, because at that time of
Got
year there's usually morels that are popping too.
Cool.
So there's a lot of options for them in the fall. It's, you'll be probably be able to buy that over the counter and get that. There's a lot of turkeys here in the state. It's and every year there's more and more bobcats. That's another one that you have to apply for. It takes quite a few years. I see those numbers probably in the next few years starting to come down. We've got a lot of bobcats starting to take over in a lot of areas of the state.
Right.
That's something to look forward to here down the road, is I think we're going to have a lot more bobcat hunting if people like to do that.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so let's switch gears back to the deer hunting. Let's talk a little bit about like terrain and habitat diversity. What are obviously, don't get super specific, but let's talk about the different zones or the different regions of Wisconsin. What can we expect from farmland to whatever
And yeah, the state is broke down into farmland units. There's the southern farmland, the central farmland, the northern. I don't even know why they really call it the northern farmland, because there's not a lot of farmland up there.
Got it.
And if you get down into the southwest corner, the southern region of the state, this is an unglaciated part of the state. It's very beautiful, it's very scenic, but it's very hilly, very steep. It's a different way to hunt whitetails, because you're going to have your thermals. You're going to be it's I don't want to say it's more of a elk hunting philosophy or out west hunting, but on one hand it is, because you have to know, you got have to start learning your thermals and different things because it's so hilly down here. River big
Right.
river bottom, creek bottoms. You get into the central part of the state, it starts flattening out, but you still have quite a bit of farmland. Down here in the southwest corner of the southern half of the state, there's a lot of farmland. So you're hunting a lot of farmland deer, field edges, even on public land. The public land usually rents out a lot of their crop ground. So there's a lot of farmland
That's
that crop
awesome.
ground is being farmed on public land.
It's like hunting private land almost.
It
You know,
almost is.
unmanaged, of course, but yeah.
Yeah. And then once you get to the central, you're getting more of a diversity. So you're starting to transition from the hardwoods and farmland into the big northern pines, and you're getting into more aspen, poplars. And then once you finally get up to the northern part of the state, it's a lot flatter. There's a few rolling hills, but you really get into that big dense forest.
Big
You get
timber.
into the poplars, you get into the big pines, you get into a lot of lake region up there. So it's a big woods mentality hunt up there compared to down here with the farmland, where they're broken up into small little pieces of wooded land with a lot more farmland around it.
All right,
So.
so let's talk about the northern region a little bit. How do you like to hunt that kind of terrain and that kind of environment, habitat?
Well, it's a whole different terrain, and I used to hunt it a lot when I was in college, because when I was in college, that's where I was, in the northern part of the state. And it was completely different. You've got to go in there with a different mentality of looking for their food source. Are there any acorns around? Are there any oak trees? What are they eating? And that was the main thing, is try to figure that out and figure out where their water was, because it's so big in that area that you can go miles and miles and miles and never see a building, never see a person, never see. So one thing that today is different is GPS, which is great for when you get up into that area, because now I can look at that. I looked at, the rolling hills. Where are the ridges? Are there any ridges within here? Does it drop down in? And because usually, even if you've got a 2 foot difference in elevation, those deer are going to feel that little bit of 2 foot difference, and they're going to run that as a ridge or run just off that. Your game trails are more decisive because the timber is so thick. So, I went in with a different mentality of scouting that, trying to find those high ridges, trying to find their food sources. And then trying to set up from there, where once you get into these other areas of big farmlands, you can glass a lot of areas. You can do a lot more from a distance to figure it out. Up there, a lot more trail cameras. However, there's a lot more bears in that area, so you're going to want to lock. And because
Yeah,
it's
a lot
public
more.
ground, you got to worry about theft. You have to worry about it. So you're going to want to lock those cameras up tight. It's the difference is the deer can move so much farther in that area when you're down here, because they're moving for food sources. So, to hunt that, look at your big aerials, try to figure out your topo maps, and then you move into there and try to find those changes. Where does it change from a hardwoods or an aspen to your big pine forest? Look for that transition point and start focusing on those transition points. A lot of people don't pay attention to, okay, the deer in an aspen area, that's their browse. That's what they want to eat. Rather than eating the pines all day long. So where is that? Where is that transition point? Where is the water within that area? That's how you want to start hunting those areas in northern Wisconsin. Focus on those and look at that instead of just saying, okay, this is a deer trail. What do I do on this deer trail? Look at those other things first and try to pinpoint those transition areas or funnel points and run with it.
Yeah, you got to bring that it's edge mentality. Look for the edge of changing habitat from one habitat to another. And I used to have a friend of mine that did quite a bit of hunting in Wisconsin. And he used to tell me there's a lot of swampy stuff up north, right?
There's a lot of swamp, a lot of rivers, a lot of lakes, yeah, a lot of swamp area.
So for me, I've always looked for that transition from a swamp to forest because that always creates an edge, a good travel corridor or whatever that deer like to use. I think it reminds me of Long Island, where I hunt a lot. I grew up hunting. There's a lot of little swampy, little swamps, little patches, and the deer use that dry ground in between.
Yeah. Right. You know, diversity in bedding too.
Yeah.
It's those, you know, those edges or those definitive points. There's a lot of difference in where they're going to bed, when they're going to feed, when they're going to bed in. It's no different than a field edge in the hardwoods. It's just a different type of food source that they're at and a different type of water.
Right.
Yeah, that's when I look at that, that's how I want to try to break that down.
Cool. What season do you prefer to hunt? Like, or what time of year do you prefer to hunt, I should say?
You know, for me, if I had, there's two times that I really like to hunt. I mean, I like to hunt all year long, obviously.
Right.
And, but if I had just two time periods to choose, first it would be right away, as soon as season opens, for that first 6-7 days, because they're still unpressured. They're still on a pattern. You can figure them out. They're going to that food source. They're going to the water. They're figuring, they're on a definite pattern that you can figure out.
Right.
Once you get past that, people start pressuring it. There's bear hunters in the woods. There's turkey hunters. Now there's bull hunters. There's people in there, you know, trying to cut wood to get ready for winter. So there's a lot more happening, especially on that public land. There's more people in there. There's, you know, grouse season is getting ready to open up. There's waterfowl season. So as people keep pushing this, all of a sudden these deer break off their pattern. So then I kind of wait, and I like to get in there in that pre-rut stage. I like the pre-rut a little more, actually a lot more than I actually like the lockdown rut stage.
Right.
At that time, they're out searching, they're looking, and they're more susceptible. They're still on the does are still on their patterns.
Yeah.
They're back to that pattern. And so if you can figure out what pattern they're running at that time of year, I like to try to focus on where those does are going, because those bucks are going to be up all day long trying to figure out where they're at during that pre-rut. They're going to be more susceptible to you being able to call them in. You're going to be more susceptible to sit all day and see more deer all day long.
Right.
So that time of year is a lot more fun. Early season, you have a good chance of killing a stud buck.
Right.
Because he's right on that pattern. But once you get past those, your next best time frame is that 7 to 10 days, starting right around that October 27th, 28th time frame, up until those deer start locking down. So you're going to get into that 6th, 7th, 8th, you know, somewhere in that 10-day time frame of November is a really good time to be getting back in there and locking those days down.
Cool. What would you say the best dates are for a guy to come out? And does it change from the southern part of the state to the northern part of the state to catch that peak chasing period where they're, you know, their friends are being running around looking for does? And,
you know, if it changes, you're only going to look at a day or two.
Okay.
There's not really a big change from the northern to the southern. It might be a little bit cooler, so you may see a little more activity. But as far as the actual breeding, as far as the chasing, you're not really going to see a huge difference from the northern part to the southern. You're just going to see a little difference in the temperatures.
Cool.
So it's going to be cooler up north. But if I had to pick, I would say the 28th, 29th of October until that 5th, 6th of November. I would say this is my block. If I get to hunt, this is my block that I really, truly want to hunt.
Nice. Do you experience the quote unquote October lull?
You know, yes and no. A lot of people do. Myself, I've looked at it, and one of the things I'm fortunate because as a landowner now, I work with the DNR on collaring deer. So as we're collaring deer, we get to find their patterns from year to year and see how far they go. I get to see that stuff from first part of January until August. During hunting season, they won't let me track my deer and figure out where they are, which kind of a bummer, you know, when you see that one really good buck you have collared and go, boy, I'd really like to know where he's at right now, but you can't do that. And so when I go back through, as we're looking at old times, it looks at the last couple of years, they coincide to things that I found out myself, you know, on foot scouting, trail cameras, different things, is that October lull, those older deer in the bucks, they lock down on a high protein food source because they're trying to put on as much weight as they can before that chasing phase. So they're not really moving a lot. That deer is still there and he hasn't got up. People say, well, it's an October lull. I'm not hunting because he's not there. He didn't get on a plane and fly to Jamaica for vacation for a couple of weeks before the rut hit. He's still there somewhere. I'll guarantee it, you know? And so looking at it, they want that protein. And it's also telling us that with this collaring is that if you've got acorn ridges, if you've got a lot of white acorns, red acorns, if you've got these in there, they're in there eating those, and they're eating a lot of them, and they're not moving far from there because they're getting both water and nutrition out of that, so they don't have to go. So at this time of year, I'm actually out scouting right now, trying to figure out where they are and where those acorns are. How do I get to that area? Or their highest protein. What is that highest protein up north? Is it aspen shoots that from areas that have been clear cut and logged? Are they so when you find that area that you should be scouting right now, I'm out there, okay, this is how I can get to this area around where their bedding is and get in their bedroom during that October lull. And that's when I want that. Usually I don't even bother going in there to hunt that until we hit that so-called October lull. I've killed some great bucks during that time frame because that's when I move into that bedroom where they want to be. Because they aren't moving more than 100, 200 yards. Some of them may, but they don't move very much during that time frame. So, you know, is there truly an October lull? Yes, depending on where you're hunting and if you have access to those types of areas. If you don't, people are like, yeah, but I might bump him out of there. It's a chance I'm going to take during that October lull, because once that pre-rut comes up and he starts on that chasing phase, he may be gone 5 miles away anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
So you might as well get in there and try it.
Absolutely. So I want you to think about this a little bit, very Wisconsin specific, and I'm trying to throw these out there so that people can, one, see the similarities in between states, because I hear this all the time. You hear people talk about, oh, but the deer in my area, they don't, you know, if you don't do this or you don't do that. And some of it's true and some of it's not. But the who depends on who you talk to. Some people are like deer or deer. But are there any behavioral differences that you notice having hunted other states in the in deer in Wisconsin? Do they do something different than other places? And if they don't, that it's fine. They don't. I like to ask that question because I get that question, or I get, not that I get the question all the time. I just get those people that are always like, well, yeah, you don't know deer here. They do this and they do that. They don't react like you, you
Well,
know.
and you know, I know what they're saying, and I think there is a definite difference in some of the deer. When I hunt Kansas to Wisconsin, when I hunt Illinois or I hunt South Dakota, I hunt different places, comparative to deer in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a little bit, because I think it's such big woods, it's more similar to the Ohio, the Illinois. As far as people say, well, my deer don't do this or my deer do this. There's a couple things. I think that the deer here in Wisconsin are easier to pattern. especially in a ag type setting, because we have such a diversity in the woods and we have huge blocks of woods. So they're coming to that same place where you get to some of the other states and they say, well, I can't pattern that deer like that early season because, and I've seen that, because today they might be 2 miles away, tomorrow, because that's where that food is. Tomorrow they may be, because they have to follow a river to drink and get to the next food source, in areas like South Dakota or Kansas where their bedding is so much different than what it is here. And they have these small little funnels and they have a big block of timber that's 3 miles away from each other. I think there's a big difference in that, and where our deer, I think, tend to herd up more in groups in hardwoods next to food sources. So I think it is easier early in the year to pattern these deer and get on a good deer than it is in some of the other states. I do believe that our deer here do look up a lot more over the years. I remember back starting hunting in the 80s, I'd take a bow out and people look at you and go, what's that thing? They thought you were crazy. And we didn't have the tree stands. You'd find a branch to stand on. Deer would walk underneath. You could do jumping jacks in that tree stand, and they didn't seem to look up. Now it seems like they walk with their head on a swivel looking at every tree. And I hear that a lot more. Well, our deer all look up. They don't look down. Well, I think they have adapted a little bit and do look up a little more out here because everything has changed. So you have to be a little bit pickier and choose more wisely on what your backdrops are and how you're going to set those tree stands, or how you're going to brush in your blind and do things. I think they're the two things here that I've seen over the years where, yeah, I think our deer are a lot easier to pattern, where people say, I've heard that when I've gone to different states, our deer don't do that here. I get there and I'm like, you're crazy, deer are deer. And then I look at it and go, wow, they're right. They're really hard to pattern out here compared to patterning here in Wisconsin, especially in the ag areas. So that is one thing right here in Wisconsin that I truly believe is a lot easier to do than other areas.
It makes sense. I mean, if your food sources, which are the ag fields and stuff like that, are more centrally or more or less dispersed, I should say, and more concentrated, then yeah, it's gonna, bring more deer to one area than, if you got, 15 square miles of woods and, two fields, they're gonna go one or two places. But if you got 15 square miles of ag fields and, just 5 square miles or 3 miles of woods, they got a bunch of places to go. But then it's the opposite too, though. You get they only got one place to bed, so you might not be able to catch them on food. So I mean, I think it's just thinking outside the box and kind of, I think, but I can see what you're saying for sure. So let's talk about the period of the rut, because I would imagine weather has something to do with the questions that I'm going to ask you right now. Or I should say time period is going to have something to do with it. So if the full moon falls on that October 28th to the November 5th or 6th or whatever you said, how does that affect?
I think the weather affects it more than the full moon, honestly. I believe that if it's warm that time of year, that the deer are, they're going to lay low till nighttime. They're going to run a lot more at nighttime. If it's like anything, when you have the full moon, always that middle of the day seems to be better to hunt, seems to be better to fish to do that. And so if it's super, super hot, you're still going to get some deer movement, but you're not going to get the deer movement that you'd see if it was cooler. So if it's cooler during that time, I would say, you know, you've got to hunt more during that time frame in the middle of the day. Find that hunt app that tells you, hey, this is when I should be hunting, and look at that. And if the weather's cool, hunt it. If it's warm, you know, you're still, even if it's warm, just dress a little lighter and get out there and do it. There's always that chance. I don't believe, especially the mature deer, I'll try to hunt more water then during that time of year, throughout the middle of the day if it's warm. But I've always got a better chance shooting a deer sitting in a tree stand than I do sitting on my couch watching the Outdoor Channel.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. Just a fact.
So how do your deer react to wind? Are they, you know, because I've been places where if it's windy all the time, like for instance, South Dakota, you mentioned South Dakota. I mean, it's freaking blowing 20 miles an hour in South Dakota all day long, every day. And if it's not 20, it's blowing 40. So you get out there and you got a 20 mile, 25 mile an hour wind, you still hunt because you know they're going to be up. How does that work out by you?
And they do. It's the same in Kansas. You know, I look at that and I'm like, these deer live in it every day, so they're used to it. It's us. We as the hunters that are miserable going, I need to strap in, you know, twice as much. I had 2 years ago, I actually had a tree blow over, a dead tree had blown over and hit me inside the head in my tree stand and about took me out. Thankfully, I had my safety belt on. And I spun around and caught myself and, you know, saw a few butterflies for a little while flying around. But it was, you know, so that's one thing I'm always careful about now when the wind is blowing. But to your question, for deer in the wind, our deer get really spooky.
Okay.
Because because we're in a region where we have a lot of hills, we have those valleys, our wind swirls a lot, especially as that wind, because we get a lot of that. The wind goes by and then pretty soon it sucks itself back. So you're getting a lot of that with those gusts. So the deer get really spooky, really nervous, and it becomes really hard to hunt here in the winds. Just because of that, if we get a really good steady wind, that's fine. I don't care if it's, you know, a 20 mile an hour steady wind, that's one thing to hunt. But once you get into those gusty winds and you've got a 10, 15 mile an hour with gusts up to 20, 25, it's tough. I mean, it's our winds get crazy and the deer get really spooky. You'll watch them, and I mean, they're on pins and needles coming through the timber. It's a whole different animal to hunt when we start getting gusts here.
Right. How fast is too fast for wind?
Oh, like I said, I don't know if there's ever too fast. I'll hunt in it because, again, it's there. Yeah, but
exactly.
I try to find that right stand placement and where it's at. But usually, you know, you get up over that 20 mile an hour wind with those gusts and things just get crazy. And so I try to get on those days, I try to get as high as I possibly can on a ridge to get that wind to either blow over the top of them when it sucks itself back, or that it'll stay more steady in one direction when those gusts come through and you don't get that wind sucking itself back on you or that wind swirl in there. So I try to get as high up on those ridges as I can at that time. But usually, like I said, if you're on any type of area on a shelf, you're trying to hunt shelves, when you get into that area, you know, you get over that 20 mile an hour gust, and it's miserable.
Gotcha. So what are some tactics or tips specific to your locale that you would recommend? You know, again, goes back to this question comes about from, you know, people saying, oh, rattling doesn't work here, or, you know, bleeding doesn't work here, or whatever. So I'd like to know you think is a, or what has worked for you?
A couple things, I guess, first to look at is in this area, stand locations, especially in the southern part, because we're so hilly, is when I'm out looking at setting up land properly, I look for what's called the first shelf. So you take that highest point that at some point will drop off to a shelf before it drops off into another ditch. So you have that shelf. A lot of deer here, because of our winds, really like to bed on that first shelf. So when I'm out scouting, I want to know for stand placement, how do I get around? I look for that thickest, nastiest area on that shelf and go look for beds, because that's more than likely where they're bedding. That way they can smell everything behind them. They can see everything below them. So they have escape routes both ways. Now I need to figure out how to get around that when I'm scouting. I look for that, and that's when I put my stand, is how do I get around where they're bedding without them seeing me come in or smell me from trying to get behind them. Once I figure that out and find out how to do that, then I can start putting my stand locations. Because ingress and egress to those areas, if you don't have those, you're done. You're
Right.
going to get busted one way or another, and those deer are going to move out of there. So right now, again, is a great time to be out there looking at that, trying to figure out before you get everything budded out and leaves all over, and try to figure out where that bedding is on those shelves. Once I get that figured out, then it's, food source to and from food sources and where they're leaving from the bedding. So trying to hang that stand is a big thing, because a lot of people have a lot of problems. I shouldn't say problems. They have issues with where to put that stand. And if you're putting it in the wrong location, you're just hurting yourself. And that's one big thing that I see with people, especially coming from out of state, because they're not used to the shelves, as I call them, that first shelf or that second shelf. They go,
Right.
oh, this first shelf looks great. And they go in and they try to set up on that shelf. The problem is, that's probably one of the best bedding areas that you have in that whole woodlot. So try to stay off that first shelf and try to figure out where to go around that first shelf and catch those deer coming to and from. Then you get into, like you said, with rattling and grunting, bleats, different things. I've heard that a lot. And I've done many seminars on that and checked a lot of different things on deer vocalizations and calling. Most of it is just because I believe it's at the wrong time of year. Early in the year, you can use social grunts, different things to get to attract those bucks in, because it's a dominance thing, especially when you open up so early, that second week in September for bow season. All of a sudden, you're still in that dominance phase. Who is who? It's like the school kids out on the schoolyard the first couple weeks of school. Who's the toughest kid on the block?
Right.
And that's what the social grunts are. They're trying to figure that out. Then I think what happens is a lot of people wait too long. They wait until they hear it's the rut. They wait until breeding season, that middle November 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. And if you wait that long, and you get into that peak breeding, they don't care about fighting anymore. They don't care about, that buck over there and who he's chasing. They're already on a hot doe, or they know who's who on the schoolyard. So you've got to take that 25th of October time frame here in Wisconsin, is that pre-rut, that 25th through that November 7th, November 8th. And that's when you should be doing more of your snort wheezes, your grunt calls, your rattling at that time of year, because that is when they're trying to figure out, they figured out the dominance early, but now they know that it's pre-rut and more deer are moving through the area. They
Right.
want to know who's in their territory and get them out of there and get them away from their does. So I think it's more of a timing issue than it is, it doesn't work. Yeah, it works. I've had it work all over the country. Deer are deer when it comes to that. And I know you said that
Right.
earlier, people say, but deer are deer when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have some type of vocalization. The difference is the timing. Kansas has a different timing. South Dakota has a different timing. Illinois, depending on where you're at in Illinois. Wisconsin is pretty much, the same. Northern Wisconsin, again, might work a few days earlier because it's a little colder up there, so there's more deer on their feet. That's what happens up there as you move down. So does it work anywhere? Yeah, it's going to work anywhere. But it's all a timing issue, I believe.
Cool. Well, awesome, man. That's all I got for you as far as questions are concerned. Why don't you let us know where our listeners can find out more about you.
You can go to my website at www.arthelenoutdoors.com. They can find me on Facebook at Art Helen Outdoors or on Instagram at Art Helen Outdoors. Hope to see a few of you out there.
Yeah, awesome, man. Thanks again for taking the time to share your knowledge on Wisconsin with us, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. I think I might give it a try next, not this season, but in 2019, I think I might come out and stomp around the woods in Wisconsin.
Call me. I know a few places.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I got this thing. Like I started it way back, and then I the last few years I've kind of let it go to the wayside just because I've just been doing so many Western game hunts. But even though I've lived out west way longer than I lived back east, I grew up hunting whitetail, and that was my first introduction to hunting was whitetail, and so I always had this. A piece of me that and this love of hunting whitetail. So I came up with this thing that I wanted to harvest a whitetail buck in every state that had whitetail in the United States. And I've knocked off 15 so far, but so I got quite a ways to go. But yeah, Wisconsin's one of the ones I need to notch in the belt on. So
Give me
I'll
a
definitely.
call.
All right, bud. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, sir. I appreciate it.
Have a good one. Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.